2-84 amendments. Some brief overview information that I sent out yesterday to you, and that's about it. Ronell Shankle has been nice enough to agree to give you an overview of the bill and go through the amendments. So, Mr. Chair, if it's all right with you, I'd like to turn it over to you.
Ronell, please come forward. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. For the record, Ronell Shankle with the Attorney General, and I'm here today actually on behalf of the Attorney General's Sexual Assault Task Force. There are two other people in the room signed up. I don't know if you want them to just come to the table at the same time. That way we could field any questions very briefly. But I'll go ahead and begin if you'd like me to, Churchill.
Sure. Why don't we bring everybody up if we've got room? Or at least one other person up.
We will be brief, and I understand you mostly want to hear about the amendments, and it's unusual to have amendments coming before a Ways and Means Subcommittee. But let me just tell you what happened to the bill so you understand why we're here today, if I might, and you will indulge me. The written testimony that I passed out was actually prepared by Heather Hutanen, who is with the Sexual Assault Task Force, and it has a lot of great detail in it. This bill was sponsored, as you will see, by Representative McPherson at the request of the Attorney General's Sexual Assault Task Force and the Sex Offender Supervision Network. Most of the work on this bill was done by the Community Corrections and Sex Offender Support Network during the interim. Jeff Woods is here from those organizations if you have any questions about how this was developed. The bill was heard in House Judiciary. I was attempting to remind some of the members yesterday who don't remember it because this bill was up on a day where you were putting through a great number of bills. We described this entire bill plus its amendment in 3 minutes or less. Thus, the little gap in memory about what it does. It is about sex offenders, treatment providers, and certifying them in title, providing titles to those persons who meet the criteria. And having said that, you have all of the rest of the information in the written testimony, and I'll just jump to the amendments unless you want to get a little more detail, Chair Shields, about the bill itself.
Well, I probably will have a couple of questions, but why don't you go through and explain the amendments?
Okay. As I mentioned, this bill was heard rather quickly in House Judiciary. It did have some amendments. It came to our attention that there were additional concerns that needed to be addressed. The bill was up at a time when we were facing first chamber deadlines in that committee, so Chair McPherson asked us to please go ahead and work with the other partners to do the amendments in the next chamber, and so here we are today.
Could I ask you a question about that?
Absolutely. The partners that we had a work group, I believe the week following the work session, if my notes are right, and we had at the table with us representatives from the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. One of those representatives is in the room here today. We had the Oregon Youth Authority at the table, the Oregon Sex Offender Supervision Network, of course. We had a representative from the Oregon Association of Community Corrections Directors and the Oregon Juvenile Department Directors Association, and then, of course, the Department of Justice and the Sexual Assault Task Force. Those other entities were the players that had additional concerns that needed to be addressed.
Have you also consulted with the group that represents psychologists, psychiatrists, social workers?
We had conversations with them. They were not at the table that day because these were to address specific concerns that had been brought forward before the committee, but we did have, I did not, but Heather and other members had several conversations with them separately outside of this meeting.
Do we have any sense of how they feel about the task force?
I do not have information specifically about how they feel about the dash fours. We did have two representatives that I believe were psychologists or psychiatrists on the telephone that day. I don't know if they were speaking on behalf of the association or as individuals. I apologize, Chair Shields, but we did have two experts on the phone.
Great. Thank you. Please continue.
Yes.
Any questions?
I just have one question. And what kind of work has been done before our discussion with the continuing education piece, the universities, and are they on board, and which ones?
Chair Shields and Senator Winters, I do not have information about the universities. I don't know whether or not, I'm looking to Jeff, whether or not there was any dialogue with them during the development of this bill. This bill was focused primarily on the persons who are providing, and we gathered information from persons who are currently providing these types of services in Oregon at the ground level, the actual treatment providers.
But I, I, follow up. I noted that you're going to adopt standards for training and continuing ed. So someone somewhere will be providing that continuing ed, hopefully.
Chair Shields, Senator Winters, that's correct. And if I might flip through the bill, I will try to find for you the information. I can tell you that one of the things you're going to see in the amendments as I walk you through is that in addition to the Oregon Health Licensing Agency establishing this board, particularly for this purpose of looking at who has the necessary training to have the certification, they will also be directed to establish an advisory board with experts on it. And again, that's all in our amendments. And those people will help to establish not only the training requirements, but will look at, and let me get you the language, the best practices and standards, which I think is where you're heading, Senator. Or if you prefer, Chair Shields, as I go through the amendments, I will come across that language and I can point it out perhaps. Will that work? Okay, let's do that.
Let's do that.
Okay, I will take you to the A4 amendments then, and they were based on the engrossed version of the bill, which is the one that I believe you have before you today. Two primary issues were discussed that resulted in these amendments. One that came to my attention, at least not being an expert in this field, is that there is a difference in the use of some of the terminology in this area of practice, and more specifically, as I understand it, there's a difference when you are dealing with pre-trial and actual information that both the prosecution and the defense attorneys are gathering in preparing for that trial, and post-trial, if you will, after the sentencing and after we have a convicted sex offender who is now subject to this treatment. This bill is absolutely focused on that latter. This bill is about people who have already received their sentence and as part of the condition are receiving sex offender treatment services. That apparently wasn't clear or perhaps wasn't going to be clear in the reading of the statute. So one of the things that you'll see we do throughout the amendments in this bill is, or two things that we do, we change the term evaluation because that can mean different things at different times in the process. And instead you'll see that we use, for example, I can point you to an example in the bill, in the amendments. And do you want me to take you two literal pages, Chair Shields, or just tell you in the amendments where this is located? What's your preference?
Well, we have, everybody has the hand-engrossed version.
Okay.
Which may
that
be
easy enough. Page. All right. Right on page one, section one, you'll notice right off the bat we changed the word evaluation to monitoring. When you're dealing with sex offender treatment, the ongoing monitoring is are very comprehensive services. One of those things, of course, would be evaluation of how those services are working, but we're not referring to a particular type of evaluation used in court. You'll see similar changes throughout the bill.
I attempted the hand engrossed version and I distributed it to your offices yesterday. If I could go make some more copies this evening.
No, we know how to read amendments.
Okay. So not.
If you go to the A engrossed, page 1, section 1, line 5, you'll see that it did say the comprehensive evaluation, treatment, and monitoring of sex offenders. We're just taking out that word evaluation because for purposes of this bill, we're dealing with monitoring. Evaluation is one piece of monitoring those services, but we're not referring to specific evaluations used in court. Throughout the bill, you'll see similar amendments, and that is the purpose.
Deletes and monitoring.
It deletes and monitoring.
Both. It just says, talks about comprehensive treatment.
Correct. And then throughout the bill, you'll see that that comprehensive treatment has all of those pieces, but we're just, excuse me, Chair Shields and Senator Nelson, but we're just trying not to specifically put a label on that has a particular legal meaning. The other thing that you'll see as an example in a couple of places, but the first one that I can point out is on page 1, also in section 1, on line 21. By having all of the players in the room, we had an opportunity to clarify something, such as you have on line 20, actually let me read subsection 3 to you. It talks about the Legislative Assembly recognizing this, and it says, beginning on line 19, public safety is best served by regulating sex offender therapists whose clients are being treated under alternative sentencing or disposition, parole, post-prison supervision by, and we're inserting a county juvenile department, because that's where supervision occurs, is at the county level, or who is in the custody of the Department of Human Services or the Oregon Youth Authority. So there is some technical cleanup that we were simply not aware of at the time of the drafting, just to clarify those different roles. And again, you'll see that throughout the bill, but that's a prime example. Probably the most significant thing you'll see in the amendments is the second thing. It will look significant to you, but let me clarify, it really isn't significant in practice. You are going to see us delete, and if you stay on page 1, line 25, there's the first example in section 1, subsection 4. On that last line, we are deleting the term certified sexual arousal interest examiner. And then specifically in the bill itself, where we were laying out the types of certification, if you go to page 2, section 3, subsection 1, we will still have a certification and a title, a piece of paper, for persons who are certified clinical sex offender therapists and persons who are certified associate sex offender therapists, but we're deleting that term, certified sexual arousal interest examiner. Again, other experts in the room can describe this to you. I learned a lot about treatment, but I can tell you that that title, when used again pre-trial for purposes of preparing, has a very specific connotation and means certain types of exams and tests, which is not the focus of this bill, which is the treatment after they've been convicted and have their terms. And again, those types of tests certainly might be used in the overall treatment, but we're not trying to specify a type, and we didn't need to work to get agreement on what tests are the current tests and which things applied to trials and did not. Not the focus of the bill. So we deleted that as a separate title. It is not necessary because the above two titles still can provide those services, those treatments, those evaluations. We don't have to give it a label. You're going to see that all the way throughout the bill. Those are the two substantive changes in the amendment. They may seem small. They may seem big. They're very important to all the people who specialize in this field of work, I came to realize. I'll just say briefly, there are a couple of statutory updates to make sure we're covering all the statutes that relate to sex offenses. Let me head to another section to get to Senator Winter's issue, if I might. Let's see. On the amendments, we are going to go to page 6 of the A. Engross bill. I believe this will address your issue. We are in section 12. We moved some language around, but Senator, if you actually have your A4 amendment, since I don't believe you have the hand engrossed, on page 3 of your A4 amendments, and excuse me, Chair Shields and Senator Winters, on page 3 of your A4 amendments, if you go down starting on line 22 of those amendments, you'll see the little subsection F that's being inserted. And later on, there's another subsection C. You can see that we are clarifying that the Sex Offender Treatment Board within the Oregon Health Licensing Agency will create a multidisciplinary advisory committee. That's where we're going to pick up some of that expertise in this area. And then you'll see further that the board can create other committees as deemed necessary as they start to work through. And because of what I assume you're referring to, all the ongoing updates and changes and new discoveries in this area, they can continue to address that through their membership of subcommittees. In the bill itself, it speaks to the various members that will be on those boards, and our goal is to have expertise in this area determining who gets to use these certificates.
So could you point me directly in the bill to where the description of the Sex Offender Treatment Board and its composition is noted?
One moment, Chair Shields.
Oh, I see. It's on section 7, page 4.
I was going to say section 7 is the beginning where it talks about the governor-appointed members of the board itself, which will be created and administered through the Oregon Health Licensing Agency. And you can see on page 4, beginning on line 28, there are the members that are going to be appointed to the board itself. And it speaks to term of office and so on.
And does appointed by the governor imply that there would be confirmation by the Senate or not?
Chair Shields, I'm not familiar with that process. I did check with the governor's policy analyst in this topical area just to ensure that this is the standard language used in the statutes. They indicated it was, so I assume that that therefore would be the process. There's further information about terms of office in section 12, which is on page 6. That's about the timing. I'm looking quickly to see if there's any other information that would be helpful to your questions. I think that is the majority of the language, and I hope that addresses the concern.
So just to get on the record, those of you who are in the Senate are familiar with this type of language.
We're just discussing that because I don't know for sure.
I don't see it in there.
It's not in
there. Confirmation is not in here.
Yeah, I think it means not confirmed because we have so many appointments and only some of them are subject to confirmation.
We have hundreds of appointments.
Yeah. So I think if it was subject to confirmation, I think it would say so, but we can check it out.
I don't know why we would treat this board any differently than any other board, though. We do all the appointments, Mr. Chair, we confirm all the appointments for all the other boards.
No, we don't.
Licensing board?
Licensing board.
Licensing board.
This is the licensing
board. Yeah.
So.
Is this a topic that has come up?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Can you address it?
Susan Wilson from the Oregon Health Licensing Agency may be able to shed some light on this. When I contacted the governor's office, which was via email, I must confess, I understood that there were sets of language you could choose from and that this one was appropriate, but I did not delve any deeper into that issue.
Okay. And by the way, Mr. O'Leary, if you happen to be watching this committee hearing, feel free to come down and testify if you can get us an answer. Please identify yourself.
Susan Wilson, Oregon Health Licensing Agency. We have boards in our office that have it numerous ways. We have councils that are advisory, appointed by the governor, not without Senate confirmation. And we have one board that also is appointed by the governor and does have Senate confirmation. There was, my understanding, a move several sessions ago to try to make sure that Senate confirmation was appropriately placed with the Senate. And they did remove some of the boards that I did have in my office from Senate confirmation. So I think this has been a governor's call.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Burdick.
Are there any licensing boards that are not subject to confirmation?
In my office, I can speak only to that, Chair Shields. Yes, there are licensing boards that are not subject to Senate confirmation in my office. I can't speak for the entire
state.
Which
ones are there?
Senator Burdick.
Chair Shields. Cosmetology, environmental health specialist used to be, is not. I'm trying to recall.
Cosmetology used to be.
Yes. So did environmental health specialists. They were sanitarians, sanitarians. They were for the counties and the.
Yes, that's what. This would be one.
So it'd be entirely up to the committee on whether or not. It's a mixed bag in my office.
Entirely up to this committee with our legislative intent. So.
No, need language.
Yeah. I think we're plowing new ground, so I would be more comfortable with the confirmation language in it. I would also like to ask the question of in your work group, in your sessions, what other states have actually implemented this kind of a commission or a board?
No, that's fine. Again, for the record, Ron L. Schenkel, Senator Chair Shields, and Senator Winters, I apologize. I do not have that information. Heather Hugh Tannen will be returning. She is out of state tomorrow, and perhaps we could bring that follow-up information along with, it sounds like we'll be back with some additional amendments. Would that be acceptable?
That would be, because I do think we are plotting new ground, and both from the standpoint of the certification and also from the standpoint of education. So I'm
Chair Shields, I do understand that one of the providers that's on the Sex Offender Supervision Network may have some information if Senator Winters would like to hear that today if we want to bring someone else up to the table.
Okay. That would be great.
But we could also do Mr. O'Leary first.
Mr. O'Leary, do you have any comments you'd like to make about whether or not this would require confirmation? I think we've got the answer, but we're not sure.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, good afternoon. For the record, Joe O'Leary, Governor Kulongoski's public safety advisor. was working on a memo to the governor when I heard my name invoked by the chair while listening to the testimony, half listening to the testimony. I apologize. And I ducked in to speak to Nancy Goss-Duran, who is the director of our executive appointments office, to confirm my understanding, which is that there is no hard and fast template or rule for commissions or boards, and that the statutes are all over the place. Some have Senate confirmation, some don't. Some are appointed by the presiding officers of each chamber and a combination of each chamber and the governor. Some are all governor. So there is no hard and fast rule for any of these. My recollection was that the, as to this bill, was that the proponents ran the language by Ms. Goss-Duran and myself and Teresa Miller, and we didn't have any problems with the language. The tricky part to us was that because there are representatives of so many different organizations, we just wanted to make sure there was flexibility there, so that names could be provided to the governor by those organizations from which to choose.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Burdick. I'm sorry. Senator Westland was in the queue, if you don't mind.
Oh, go ahead. Change the question.
The question is, if it's not mentioned specifically in the statute, the legal question is, if it's not mentioned specifically in the statute that there's Senate confirmation, is there any other statutory framework that might require that? In other words, do we need an amendment to fix that?
Chair Shields, Senator Burdick, I believe the answer is no. If it's not mentioned in the language of the statute, that means Senate confirmation is not required.
Senator Westland and Senator Brown.
Mr. Chair, just to kind of follow up, I guess, Joe, my the most recent board that I've been involved with that we created was the Juvenile PSRB, and I guess given the level of folks that we're dealing with here, I think it doesn't hurt to have another set of eyes take a look at these appointments. I mean, so I guess unless the governor has a huge objection, I'd like to see Senate confirmation for at least a period of time, until this board is up and running and functioning and all that kind of stuff. So that's just my comment, unless we've got a huge disagreement from the governor's office.
Chair Shields, Senator Brown, to be clear, we weren't asked to weigh in on our preference about whether or not this should be a Senate confirmation or not. The way it was presented, it did not have Senate confirmation, and that was fine with us. Whether it does or does not is completely up to you. We don't have a stake in that one way or the other.
Well, maybe that answers my question. As I read the bill, I don't see, you know, a critical timeline here, but maybe some proponents of the bill could address this. Is there a need to get this board appointed and functioning as a board soon, as opposed to waiting until we have our first confirmation, Senate confirmation meeting? In September. I don't know if there's a logistical need to do that. I know boards are prohibited if they are requiring of Senate confirmation from meeting and acting as a board prior to Senate confirmation. But just is there a logistical timeline here that has to be met? Maybe that's the reason the bill was written the way it was.
Chair Shields, Senator Westland, again for the record, Ron L. Schenkel. This bill does have an emergency clause on it. It is my understanding that that was put on there simply because of the topic and the focus of this bill. We currently have people in our community providing these services, and no oversight as to what kind of training they have before they hang up their shingle, quite honestly. I don't think that beyond checking with the Oregon Health Licensing Agency to see if they could gear up and do this that quickly, which indications were they thought they could perhaps do so, and Ms. Wilson could address that, there certainly wouldn't be a concern if we need to go through a Senate confirmation to slow this down and do this right and get it through process. It's more important to have a good process and to have this be an effective certification, and balance that with keeping things moving.
Okay, let's continue, and then we'll provide some instructions on whether or not we want to have that amendment.
We do have a person here that could address Senator Winter's issues, perhaps.
For the record, my name is Catherine Gotch. I'm the clinical coordinator for the Sex Offender Unit for Multnomah County Department of Community Justice, and I'm the principal author of this bill. And Chair Shields, members of the committee, Senator Winters, in response to your question, there are approximately 13 states that have a sex offender management board or a similar process or board in place for the certification and management of sex offenders.
Any of our neighbors?
Offhand, California just passed the legislation, their past legislative session. Colorado has the longest standing sex offender management board, lasting for approximately 12 years it's been in place. New Mexico passed legislation to develop it approximately 2 years ago. Illinois had one in place for, I believe, about 4 years, 4 or 5 years. And Washington, I do not believe, has one, but they do have a process for certifying sex offender treatment providers, and it's a very intensive process, but it's not specifically a board. So there is a national trend.
It's a national trend, and there
most
are
definitely.
There are some standards in place so that we don't have to reinvent a lot of wheels.
We are not reinventing the wheel, most definitely.
And Ms. Gotch, I know you've been working in this field for a long time. Could you talk a little bit about your qualifications?
Yes, I have a master's degree from the University of Denver in forensic psychology. I began my work with sexual offenders in 2000 at a community outpatient treatment program for adult sex offenders on community supervision. And then I worked at the Massachusetts Treatment Center for Sexually Violent Predators under a civil commitment model. And then I came here to Oregon, and I have been working for Multnomah County for approximately almost 3 years now, and my duties include evaluation and assessment, management of our community treatment providers, research, consultation for the POs, as well as policy legislative development.
And I attended a group that focuses on supervision and treatment of sex offenders not too long ago to address about legislative issues. So it seemed to me that the impression I got at that meeting is that there was a broad base of support for this from probation, parole officers, treatment providers, et cetera. Could you comment on the depth of that?
Yes, Chair Shields, member of the committee. Would you like me to give a little bit of the history of how this came about?
Okay.
Would that be of benefit? This started, we've actually been working on this process for approximately now about 2.5 years. It began as a joint subcommittee with the Juvenile Sex Offender Management Steering Committee, which was a federally funded grant addressing juvenile management and treatment within Oregon, and the Sex Offender Supervision Network. And in the development of this bill, many bodies were contacted, including a number of the treatment provider organizations, such as the Oregon Association for the Treatment of Sexual Abusers, the Oregon Adolescent Sex Offender Treatment Network, the varying bodies of community correction agencies, including juvenile and adults, and the varying counties in relationship to that, the Board of Parole, Department of Corrections, Department of Human Services. And early on, we received support from the Oregon Association of Community Corrections Directors, the Board of Parole, the Oregon Association for the Treatment of Sexual Abusers, the Oregon Adolescent Association for the Oregon Adolescent Treatment Network for Juveniles, and indication of support of the concept from the Department of Human Services. And then as we've been working collaboratively with our other community partners, we've received a great deal of support for this concept.
And lastly, just on the who else is on board category, so a lot of the youth sexual perpetrator service providers like Morrison Center and others are also believe this is a good idea, as far as you know.
Yes, Chair Shields, members of the committee, as was stated earlier, the Oregon Youth Authority, the Oregon Juvenile Department of Community Corrections Directors were involved in the most recent amendment changes due to the language, and overall we seem to have a fairly large body of support for this. And historically, I believe this has been presented previously, because there's always been a large desire for there to be some level of standardization and certification for sex offender treatment providers.
Just a quick question, Mr. Chair. Are any of our institutions, educational institutions, right now equipped to do continuing ed?
Chair Shields, members of the committee, Senator Winters. Currently, there is minimal specialized education for treatment of sex offenders in higher level education, such as master's programs, doctoral programs. However, there are a number of bodies, such as the Oregon Association for the Treatment of Sexual Abusers, as well as the National Association for the Treatment of Sexual Abusers, who provide ongoing education and continuing education that meets the requirements for CEUs for all of the other licensing boards. So there's much training out there already, and I think working collaboratively with the universities in the future so that there is more specialized training in this area would be of highly beneficial.
So it could be highly, it could be highly beneficial for the institution of education as a part of some of the development?
Oh, most definitely, Senator Winters.
Okay, so we've gone through, you've completed walking us through the amendments. Would you like to comment also?
Chair Shields, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Wood. I'm a sergeant with the Chrome Probation Division of the Marion County Sheriff's Office. I'm the legislative chair for the Sex Offender Supervision Network, and I am also here on behalf of the Oregon Association of Community Corrections Directors. I am testifying here in support of House Bill 3233. I'm not going to go, as you all are very well aware of the concept, the Sex Offender Supervision Network and OACCD did collaboratively work with the Attorney General's Sexual Assault Task Force and and Representative McPherson to address this issue. The one point I'd really like to make that may be omitted is currently community corrections is tasked with supervision and approval of sex offender therapists who provide these services for the sex offenders that reside in the counties. Some counties, like in Marion, have developed protocols for approved sex offender therapists. Some have not. This problem has made requirements for sex offender therapists in Marion County that are not adhered to in Polk County or Yamhill County. There may be some requirements in Multnomah County that Marion County does not adhere to. This problem has sort of developed an inconsistency amongst the counties on who is approved, who is not approved, and just given the nature and the importance of sex offenders who are released in the community, who we are tasked and charged with the reformative process, this causes problems amongst the supervision. And given the importance of this matter, whenever you say the word sex offender, it creates a very emotional, at times visceral response about what to do with this population. I feel it's very important to express how important it is to develop a board that addresses the consistency amongst the treatment providers so that everyone, regardless of Burns, Marion County, Yamhill County, Harney County, all have certain standards that all therapists have to abide by. And I'm available for any questions if there are any.
Well, going to the question of confirmation, if you look at page 4 of the bill, it says that the members, these organizations have to submit the names of the people that the governor would appoint. Is that correct? So can you tell me about how many members the Oregon Association for Treatment of Sexual Abusers might have, or how many members the Oregon Adolescent Sex Offender Treatment Network might have? You know, they've fairly well established. I've heard of these organizations, but I'm not very familiar.
Chair Shields, members of the committee, I cannot give you exact numbers. I apologize. However, I can state that a number of the individuals who provide sex offender treatment within the state of Oregon are a member of OASA, whether they are adult or juvenile providers, and also members of OSOTN, which is the Oregon Adolescent Sex Offender Treatment Network. If you would like numbers, I can obtain those and get them to you within probably sometime next week.
Is it more than 25?
Yes, most definitely more than 25. At a minimum, I would say there are probably a few hundred in each.
I just needed a ballpark figure.
Okay.
Because if you only had two members and you were appointing one.
No.
I mean, that being said, I feel a little more comfortable that the governor can't just isn't on the spot for making this type of judgment all on his own. But could you address the need of getting this ramped up quickly as opposed to the confirmation process, which probably could put us back to certainly February of next year?
September.
They don't have to be voted on?
We have executive appointments, Mr. Chair.
Oh, I see. Okay.
We plan to have them in September, and so we'll have an executive appointments meeting. The committee will meet, and then they'll be on the Senate floor in September,
gotcha,
sometime.
Okay. So if you could address it, would that be hurtful to the process or helpful? What's your opinion?
Chair Shields, again for the record, Ron L. Schenkel. I think my previous statement is really how that emergency clause came about. We are passionate, and as you can tell from all the players involved, about making this happen and bringing it together. It is really left to the discretion of this body to determine what the most appropriate process is, and we will work within that process.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just given the nature and content of the specialty of this board, and given that it's new, and though the House does not participate in this process, I guess I look at this and feel like the Senate confirmation process is there for a reason, and therefore might be critically important to examine who these folks are and how they're going to go about this. And so I would be in favor, given that it doesn't seem detrimental to their timing, and puts a different level of scrutiny on the people that are being appointed. It seems to be a good thing to me.
Other comments? Senator Wesson?
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, I understand that I participate in that process. It's a very good process. But one of the things, and correct me if I'm wrong in this, Deborah, but all of the people that would be being put forth to the governor to be selected would have themselves had their licenses or professional credentials issued by a board that was subject to Senate confirmation. Is that a fair assessment?
There's no board.
There's no board.
No, but these people didn't just walk in off the street and say, yeah, I want to be a...
Yes,
they did. I think some of them did.
Yeah. Some of them did.
Yeah, at this juncture.
Some of them did. I can name a few.
Is everyone who is part of this either a licensed, accredited social worker, a psychologist, or some might just be probation parole officers, I assume?
Chair Shields, can I ask for clarification? Sure. Are you talking about those who will be applying for certification or those who are being recommended for the board? For those who are being recommended for the board, you will have members. It's not just mental health professionals. It's a multidisciplinary board, which includes one member recommended by the Oregon Community Corrections Directors Association. Well, I've switched my acronyms around. Excuse me. And one member who's from the Oregon Juvenile Directors Association. And then also a victim advocate who is recommended by a victim advocacy organization. So for the clinical people, they must meet, and I believe the language is in the bill, that they must meet the requirements for certification within a specific time period after being appointed. And there is a requirement for licensure for being certified at the clinical level. So licensure would have been through LPC, LCSW, psychologist, MD. So that answer your question?
That's nice.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, not to belabor this, but I will point out that we also confirm appointments to the Board of Medical Examiners, and they'll conclude very high-level physicians that have numerous certifications and licensing. But our role is sort of a second set of eyes taking a look at these appointments. And secondly, I think it's really important that we have a public process, and particularly in an issue as controversial as this one, it allows members of the public to come testify on these appointments. That does not happen, with all due respect, in the executive branch. So that's just...
I think
think I would tend to, my view, and I'd be interested in hearing more discussion from the committee members so we can set some direction, but if it's not going to throw off your timelines terribly by going to September, I would side with Representative Hannah and Senator Brown that a second set of eyes might not be a bad thing. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to ask, in practical terms, what kind of delay are we talking about? If a process is started, you know, after a bill has passed the House and been signed by the governor, in practical terms, does that mean that this board would be up and running perhaps 2 months after it would have otherwise? It's not putting a half a year delay or a year delay, for example. I would just like to put this in sort of real terms, practical terms. Is it more like a month or two delay over what it would have been otherwise?
Chair Shears, Representative Nathanson. In response to some back and forth conversations I've had with the Oregon Health Licensing Office, they indicated that they expected to be able to get up and running within 150 days. And so, yes, by waiting till September, we're really not—you're not really delaying that process that much. So, by the time they are confirmed, then they can have their meeting, they can approve the draft rules, and get started.
Chair, point of clarification.
Representative.
Thank you. The emergency clause allows them to 90 days after signing die, correct?
Is that?
I mean so that's what I'm saying is.
It's on passage.
After it's been signed.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Well, still you're looking at 60 days maximum to get to the outside of September. So time-wise.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Maybe what we should recommend is that if you're going to go get the amendment, we can have some more discussion about it. We can vote on it as it gets closer. Senator Wesson, do you want to come in? And then we can grapple with that appointment process once you bring it forward. I know LC is not really busy, so they'd be happy to.
And Mr. Chair, it only takes just a little bit to add Senate confirmation to the.
And we'll be lucky to get it done by September with a board like this. I mean, with the it's just to find the people with a new board with all these groups. We'll be lucky to get it done by September.
And Mr. Chair, and I'm sure that Mr. Wood can validate that if you looked at Marion County versus Polk County, we have quite a difference in who would be appointed from out of this region would be could be very politically. Have some political fallout, so I think a confirmation is very sensitive.
All right. I think you've got your marching orders.
Chair Shields, may I ask a point of clarification, please? We will certainly work on having that confirmation language added. I presume, therefore, we need to remove the emergency clause text.
No,
we can continue that, and we thank you.
Okay. Anything else? I think we've got one or two more people signed up to testify. Thank you very much for your hard work on this. We look forward to moving this forward next time you come before us. Thanks. All right. So Ms. Wilson has already testified, correct? And Mr. Sorensen? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
You can please identify yourself for the record.
Yeah, I'm Bob Sorensen. I'm the investigator for the Oregon Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists. And when this bill first heard about this bill, the administrator, Julia Cooley, and I talked about it in the office, and I expressed some opinions because I've got about 20 years of law enforcement experience before I went to work as an investigator for DHS and now DAS, but she thought that you guys would be interested in some of the experiences I had in my law enforcement career and now some of my experience as an investigator for the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists. And I apologize for me. I was at my day off working in my shop on my hot rod and got a call about 15 minutes to 3. Otherwise, I would have a tie on today. I apologize for that. But In my law enforcement career, one of the things that I had an opportunity to do was work several homicide cases, both in California and Oregon, where the perpetrator was admitting, and I'd like to think they were admitting to being completely forthright and truthful. And one of the two most common things was sexual abuse as a child. They were victims of sexual abuse as a child. Secondly, there was a lot of animal cruelty in right around puberty. They were rather vicious with animals, but they were mostly victims of sexual abuse as a child. And then I noticed that when I was interviewing people who were admitting sexual abuse crimes, they were victims of sexual abuse as a child. And I just kind of saw this cycle and thought it would be great if we could do something to break this cycle. And I talked with several families, siblings of this person who committed a murder, and in one case multiple murders, and some of the horror stories they told about his sexual abuse as a child. And when I talked with some of the siblings who turned out okay, they didn't turn out to be murderers, in fact pretty good citizens, most of them, and the difference was they got the help they needed. They got somebody to help them in some counseling and therapy and maybe a mentor or two. So, and I thought it was, gee, it's really hard to put a value on a child's innocence. And I think the recidivism rate is pretty high. I'm not prepared to say the exact rate, but I know it's pretty high, or it used to be pretty high. So I really believe that this bill is a step in the direction to break this cycle, to get some of these convicted sex offenders, maybe the first time, the help they need from good, qualified, experienced therapists that can help and maybe break this cycle that I've seen throughout my career.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Swanson. Good testimony. Questions for this witness? Thank you very much. Anybody else here care to testify on House Bill 3233A? All right, thank you very much for coming, everyone. We'll close this public hearing, and we'll move into work session on Senate Bill 5507, and I'll talk very slowly while Mr. Wilson passes out the material to us.
Gee, Mr. Chair, this is the first time we've been able to understand y'all session. Mr. Chair, a bit of background real quickly. The subcommittee passed out the Criminal Justice Commission budget, I think about 3 weeks ago. Right after that, it came to light that that the funding that was provided in Package 101, which was titled Sustained Drug Court Funding, my recommendation had been based on that funding would be used to pretty much backfill and continue grants that had been awarded during this current biennium. It came to light after that that there were other revenues available to offset the need for that general fund, and that's why it's back today. There are a series of motions, since this is up for possible reconsideration, that, Mr. Chair, you need to go through and then get to where my recommendations are.
Okay. So I open a work session on Senate Bill 5507. Do I need to state that that is for possible reconsideration?
Yes.
Okay, so should I gavel in again using
that
exact
language?
Okay. Well, I already opened a work session on it, so why don't I close the work session on Senate Bill 5507, and to get the language correct, open a work session on Senate Bill 5507 for possible reconsideration. And then moving to the next motion, the chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended to allow a motion to reconsider the vote by which Senate Bill 5507 was reported out to the full committee. Are there any objections? Seeing none, motion passes.
Mr. Chair, I move to reconsider the vote by which Senate Bill 5507 was reported out to the full committee.
Senator Westland has moved to reconsider the vote by which Senate Bill 5507 was reported out to the full committee. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. The motion carries and the bill is back before the subcommittee. Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, I've passed out the memo in front of you, a two-page memo. I apologize for not getting you out, getting this out to you before, but actually the draft you see in front of you was begun about 2:20 this afternoon. As I said in the opening remarks, that this is back just to deal with one of the policy packages based on new information after the original work session. And I'll go through that table on the front page there to sort of set the stage. The total amount required, keep in mind there were two sort of pots of drug grant money. One was purely general fund, which had originally been part of the meth package. And then at the same time, the governor had used burn grant funds, federal funds, to have a separate drug program. And these monies reflect that second drug grant program. And it was originally thought that the 3.6, my recommendation is based on the 3.6, was needed to continue that grant, that second grant program. But after conversations with the agency after the work session, it came to light that the total amount needed in 2007-09 to continue that grant program is just a shade over $3 million. That includes a little bit of inflation funding. In addition, there was just under $1.5 million of grant money that had already been committed to this. And it was unknown to myself or the DAS analyst that those funds were available. So that means that the remaining amount required for 07-09 to continue that grant program is the $1.3 million on the third line of that table. In addition, it came to light... 1.5. I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah. And then it came to light that there are some undesignated federal justice assistance grants, the JAG grants. The JAG grants replace the burn grants under federal law and a few other things, but the JAG grants, there was undesignated amounts, and a little over $1 million was available, so that got down to the remaining general fund need to fully fund this particular drug court program. If for 07-09 was $528,000. That is provided here with a combination of resources from the co-chairs and from the subcommittee resources. In addition, mainly from Representative Nathanson, there's $500,000 in my recommendation for expanding the program for another $500,000, or about 17% expansion of the program. So the total general fund for this particular grant program, my recommendation is $1,028,000. That offsets the need for $3.6 million of general fund in the original work session and what passed out of this about 3 weeks ago. And so that allows the necessary amount to keep the same amount of grants going plus an expansion. There's a savings of almost $2.6 million. The bullets on the next page basically just summarize what I just talked you through. The table in the middle of the second page is the new sort of agency appropriation and limitation needs, and then there is a new amendment, appropriation bill amendment there that reflects the new LFO recommendations. We stand for any questions, Mr. Chair, on this.
Questions for Mr. Wilson? Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's not a question. I'd like to make a comment, and if I'm wrong, please correct me. What we're seeing here, what I hear from people about is how we're decreasing something, and actually we're just increasing it at a slightly less rate than someone had anticipated earlier. You know, it's still increased, but it's referred to as a decrease. What we're seeing here, even though there are changes that look like, for example, on Section 2, other funds, it looks like a $2 million decrease. What we're seeing is the program is still going to be funded generally at the level that we saw when we first passed this by the committee. There is still an expansion of this particular program. These are really technical changes in how we account for funds. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that's basically correct, and actually compared to what at least I thought by base of the recommendation, you are actually with these actions expanding the program with the $500,000. Keep in mind as you look at the numbers there on that page two, just under $1.5 million of resources are actually part of the state police budget and are part of that, go to that program. So you don't see all of the funding available for this grant program for 07-09.
Yes. Thank you very much.
So just to clarify, the $1.5 million you've talked about, that is federal grant money that's currently lodged at OSP right now?
Mr. Chair, that is right.
And then there's an additional close to $1 million that is the undesignated JAG money that the governor has discretion over.
Mr. Chair, that is right.
Also slash burn grants. And then Representative Dickinson and the committee are helping to make up the difference to get us back to the number where we thought we originally were before when we passed the budget. Is that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, it's a good representation.
And I appreciate that this isn't exactly crystal clear at this particular moment, but we've been trying to get our hands around this budget and how we can move it forward, and so we had to make some decisions about whether or not to put the brakes on it and go figure out if we can ask the co-chairs for more money to plug these things. And we instead decided to use some of the resources from the committee and take a little out of Representative Nathanson's anticipation to expand to get this budget done and to get Craig on his way. Mr. Prince, do you want to make any comments? You're all right. Okay. So at this point, I'll just leave it up into discussions before we make some decisions about moving it. But I feel confident that it is on solid financial ground, even though I don't feel as good as I could about the process for you having this information in advance. So, any discussion?
Move it.
All right. Let's move it. Where are we?
Mr. Chair, I move the LFO recommendations as outlined in the Senate Bill 5507 memorandum dated June 6th.
Senator Lesland has moved the LFO recommendations. Are there any objections? Seeing none, the motion is approved. Is there a motion to approve the Criminal Justice Commission budget?
Chair, I move the budget for the Criminal Justice Commission as presented by LFO to the subcommittee.
Senator Westland has moved the budget for the Criminal Justice Commission. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Motion is approved.
Mr. Chair, I move 5507 as amended to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means with a two-passable recommendation.
Senator Westland has moved Senate Bill 5507 as amended be reported out to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means with a two-pass recommendation. Are there any objections? Seeing none, the motion is approved. We have a record of the previous carriers.
Mr. Chair and full committee, it's Representative Nathanson, and also on the House floor, and Senator Brown on the Senate floor.
Okay.
Now, can we get another carrier?
I don't know if she has the juice to pull it off.
I was a little worried today with photo radar. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
I was a little worried. I was sweating that one.
All right. I know, but there was a lot of our members. Next thing, do we have a judicial order? I'm ready for that.
No.
Okay.
When are we meeting on
Mr. Chair, there are two.
When are we meeting on
there are two budgets left in the subcommittee that have not been passed out. One is the district attorney's and one is judicial. And I'm sure they'll not be, those will not be heard this week, for sure.
Any other discussion? This committee is adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.